Hi everyone, welcome to the Ali Houston Transforms podcast. I'm Ali Houston, health coach, food innovator and scientist. I survived years of weight problems, mental health issues, autoimmune diseases, surgery and even cancer. I turned my health around by diving into the scientific research, changing what I eat and what I do. I founded Paleo Canteen and the Ali Houston Transforms podcast to not only share this life-changing information, but to engage in a process of discovery and illumination with my guests and all of you. This podcast is made possible by paleocanteen.co.uk. Head over there after the episode. You can find a link to download your free guide, 6 Pillars to Achieve Your Healthy Weight. Transforming into being healthy is so much more than just a list of foods. It's a rich process of becoming that never stops. Head over to paleocanteen.co.uk or follow the link in the show notes to find out what I mean. And if you find this episode useful or interesting, please share it far and wide, or even just with a friend. Thanks and enjoy the show.
And we are recording. And I'm very happy to have with me today Pam Devine, who's the co-founder of Low Carb USA. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Ali, for having me. This is a pleasure and an honor.
The honor is mine. We spoke a few years ago about conferences in general and low carb conferences. And I remember at the time you saying it'd been a tough road and at the very start, particularly, but you seem to be in your stride now. You know, can you tell us about how it all started and how it's going?
Yeah, I'd love to. Do you want to talk like way back to when we first started low carb ourselves and how?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, like, we kind of, you know, stumbled across low carb nutrition when we thought we were promoting healthy lifestyles and sports nutrition for a number of years before. We actually started volunteering at our local running club, bringing and promoting sports nutrition products, and they were carb loaded based things. I don't know if anybody listening has ever listened to Doug Reynolds, my partner in life and low carb USA, talk about his past, you know, how we started, but he's got a long history of running, and he's from South Africa originally. And when he first started running and learning about it, and he read the book, The Lore of Running by Professor Tim Noakes. And anybody who knows Tim Noakes' story knows that for many years he was promoting low carb loading. He actually was one of the first developers of the kind of things that are like the goo that people will use, you know, during their runs. They developed something called FRS, I think, or FRN, because there's an N in there, Noakes, Forsyth, and I can't remember the other person's name, but, you know, developing that. And when he started running, it was all carb loading and Coca-Cola. They had all at all the stations. And so, you know, we started bringing out what we thought was a healthy drink, a healthy alternative. And we were doing health expos at corporations and talking about nutrition and movement and exercise and food and supplementing. And funny enough, you know, we thought we were talking about the thing that was helping people, but we knew we always met a lot of people who were struggling. So were we like a lot of the health professionals who were confused about why people weren't having success? You know, people weren't doing it right, or they weren't able to commit, or, you know, whatever that is. It was always, you know, a little bit confusing when you see how unhealthy people are getting. And, you know, they're working long hours, obviously. But, you know, we knew a lot of people in the running club who ran and trained for marathons and ran for months. You know, the marathon training program went for 8 months and they met twice a week. And then each run on the Saturday got longer and longer and longer. And Tuesdays they were doing sprints and they were doing track workouts and they were running up hills. And there were quite a few people who were still same weight or gaining weight. And it's like, what's going, you know, that doesn't make sense. And we had been introduced along the way to a conversation about ketones, and we didn't even know what they were. And it's like, wait a minute, what is this low carb ketogenic diet? One of the things that Doug will talk about is it said ketones as an alternative source of fuel than glucose. And he's like, wait a minute, what is this? So I've been running and carb loading and all this time, and I've never heard of anything like this. So he started reading it and going down a major rabbit hole of Jeff Olick and Steve Finney's work, Art and Science of Low Carb Living and Low Carb for Performance. And he's fascinated. I kept walking by his computer and saying, are you still reading about low carb and ketogenic? Are you still? And he's like, yeah, he was fascinated. And one day he said, so I've got a list and we're going to the grocery store. And I was like, very confused by this. I said, you have a list and you're going to the grocery store with me? It was at that time we used to have to kind of pull teeth to say, can you help me get the groceries? And he's like, ah, I have other things to do. And Allie, so I said, so what's on this list? It's bacon and meats and cheeses and full fat dairy and all the stuff and vegetables. I'm like, I was very confused by Doug wanting to go and do this, which was funny. So, and I remember, like all of us, when we first started hearing this, well, if we're not going to be eating grains and things like that, where are we going to get our nutrients from? Our fortified grains. you know, because I thought I had been trying to eat healthy, although I knew I had a really sweet tooth. And I knew growing up that I'd had a lot of sweets in my household. I had friends in high school come over and say, there's a lot of junk food in your house. And I was confused then too. I said, isn't everybody's house like this? I mean, cereal, sweetened cereal, you know, and donuts and danishes and cookies and ice cream and soda were very commonplace in growing up in the house. And I'd gotten away from quite a bit of that as much as I thought I should. You know, I had some, but I was trying to eat whole grains. I was trying to introduce more fruit to my diet. I thought, because that, you know, more fruit must be healthier. Brown rice, quinoa. Doug was like, you're not making quinoa, are you? And I'm like, it's not bad. You're going to like it. He's like, I don't know. And he'd say, are you making kale? I'm like, yeah, I'll just sneak it in. I'll cook it down. I'll cook it really tender for you. Like, and he could never understand. He's like, it never gets tender enough. You know, just trying to kind of squeeze all that stuff in there. We were working a pretty stressful job at the time in a corporate startup. And I remember like trying to get to lunch and get something healthy. There was a place around the corner in the industrial park that we were in, and they did pretty homemade, almost home cooked, like salmon and vegetables and homemade soups. And I would try to go there, but I had to spend a little bit more for it, and I couldn't go as often as I'd like. The other little deli that was close to us, Doug, what I'd say, you know, what do you want for lunch? And he'd always say a burger and fries and a Coke, or burger, we call them chips. What do you guys call crisps? A burger, crisps, and a Coke will be fine. And I'm like, not again. You can't eat this every day, Doug. You know, not a real great burger source of a burger, I'm sure, but I wasn't really sure where they sourced them from. On a white bun with crisps and a soda. And I thought, that can't be healthy for you to do every day. So I would always try to supplement his dinner and stuff like that. And he never ate breakfast like I did, but my breakfast, I thought I was going real healthy. Oatmeal, I tried to get away from the instant oatmeal and, or, you know, do some of the steel cut oats, add some nuts for protein and some fruit for nutrients, low fat yogurt with the one with the less sugar, but it was all low fat. The skinny coffee from the coffee place was low fat and still had sugar. And I was starving 2 hours later for either that lunch, or my body always would say, I would say to Doug, I have to go to the deli. He says, we're kind of close to lunch. I said, I really have to go get some hard-boiled eggs. Like, I don't know what it is. I was panicking. And my body was like telling me that I needed to go and get some hard-boiled eggs because I needed the fat and I needed the protein that I hadn't got enough of at breakfast. Obviously, it was the weirdest thing.
Do you think that was purely psychological, thinking back on it, or do you think there was some kind of physical thing involved? Was it just because?
It was definitely physical. And I know my blood sugar was dropping, but I think my body was telling me I didn't have enough protein. And then the fat was kind of, you know, along with the ride with the eggs, I think. So I definitely would crash for sugar. And the afternoon was bad. I always say, don't, you know, I used to tell the deli, please don't put those chocolate chip cookies in my bag that you always try to sneak in there, because I don't want to eat them later. But they always thought they were doing me a favor, and it was, you know, a nice treat. And I'm like, oh, the cookies in here. So then I would know I would eat some of it later. Or I'd put it in my drawer and say, don't eat this. And I'd hate to throw food away, so I would put it in my drawer. And afternoons were bad for sweets, but I'd try to get the healthy sweets with nuts and something like that.
So when Doug suggested that you make this change, did you go along wholeheartedly with him, or were you kind of dragged kicking and screaming?
I wasn't kicking and screaming as much as I was a little bit slow at the uptake. We both kind of had to get our heads wrapped around increasing the fat.
The feeling I had was, even though I'd read the science, even though I felt confident that if I went keto, then I would lose weight and I would feel good, which is exactly what happened, I was still kind of thinking, when's my heart going to explode? And just because the conditioning's so strong, isn't it?
It really is. I was telling you that my dad went in Scotland recently, and he was telling me they had these beautiful scrambled eggs every day. And he's like, you could see, like, he was nervous that he had eggs every day for 5 or 7 days. I'm like, Dad, that's not going to hurt you for that short of a time, first of all. And, you know, if you can get people to read some of the information and start to believe it, it starts to help a little bit. But even us, or people who are listening who've read quite a bit but and started to make the adjustment, are still worried and not really sure. An adjustment.
And of course, it's an adjustment, and there's lots of people who just make the adjustment bit by bit in their own pace, feel the benefits, oftentimes stick with it. Sometimes it morphs into different types of keto or carnivore, or chopping back and forth between one or the other. But not everyone starts national, international conferences based on dietary habit changes. So how do you get from... you know, first of all, what benefits you felt to starting an international conference?
Yeah, so, you know, Doug started, you know, we started buying the fatty meats and the ribeyes to go back to the adjustment. And he tells a story about how he was giggling, and instead of cutting it all off, he's like, I'm going to enjoy the flavor of this, you know, fatty meat. And he, being a man, gentleman, dropped the weight really quickly, actually. He wasn't, you know, we ran, and we were actually we were more active than anybody in our office at that time, but didn't run as much as a lot of the people in our marathon training program. At the same time, we were doing 2 or 3 classes at martial arts, sometimes back-to-back classes in martial arts, 90 minutes, and we were still putting on weight. So for Doug, it was really super easy for him to drop the weight as soon as we started. For me, I was starting early menopause as a middle-aged woman at about 46, I was at the time. And it didn't come off as easy for me. But as we were making the transition to eating differently, I was like, okay, well, I'm cutting out the sugar. This is going to be great for me. Cutting down on that sugar and adding more vegetables with our meat at the time than maybe we always used to, you know, snacking on cucumbers and with the ranch dressing with our lunch, and olives and meats. And I probably had some salads more than Doug did. And so the first time that I could ever kind of span that breakfast to lunch time frame was surprising to me. And then whenever I started skipping breakfast altogether and just having a coffee with cream, I was like flabbergasted. I'm like, how is this even possible that I'm not starving and cranky and hangry and have a headache? So I think that was one of the most powerful things for me, was that I felt like I had food freedom. I had gotten really confused about what was good for me to eat. I was trying to eat healthy, but I was hungry a lot. Running makes me really hungry. It was a real carb base activity, actually made me really hungry and really tired. And I didn't understand what to eat, and I was continually still putting on weight. So when I stopped putting on weight, and I might have lost a few pounds, I didn't lose it all very quickly, and I wasn't a lot of weight overweight, but I was the heaviest I'd ever been. I think I was 175, which was the most I'd ever been, and nothing was fitting anymore, and I was really uncomfortable. And but when I was able to start skipping meals, I was really amazed, and not, like you said, feeling better because you're not hangry and I'm not having that blood sugar roller coaster. And the first time I ever went until 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I think I had to announce it to Doug. I haven't eaten since yesterday. And it was 3, and I had just gotten back from a walk, and it had been hot outside, and all I had was salty water. And at that time, we might have been doing some exogenous ketones, which we don't do so much of anymore. But that kind of was a good bridge at times as well. You know, since we were working out a lot, we would use them sometimes, and then a bridge in between the fasting times and stuff like that. But it took me a little while to finally lose the weight, but just having that feeling of satiety and not hungry and still having energy was great for me. To answer your question, how did we get from there to starting conferences? So I think, like,
First of all, I know we all get used to hearing these stories in a way, but I just think each one of them is brilliant and a miracle in its own right. And I think it's great that you felt that benefit, the multiple benefits, and that, you know, you leveled up in some way. So well done. Congratulations.
Thank you. And in so many ways. And I think you were talking about using the words transformation and transform more going forward in your practice and stuff. And it really is a transformation. So when we started meeting people or listening to people online, reading books, learning the science and the benefits, we immediately wanted to start sharing it with other people. I think, like a lot of us who have done this for a few months, even only a few weeks, a few months, and you start hearing, feeling the benefits, and then hearing of other things, then you just want to start sharing it with people. So our first thought was we wanted to also become coaches like you're talking about. We wanted to share the benefits. So Doug had applied to a coaching program that was international, and they weren't actually ready to take on international students yet. And he was so devastated. I remember writing to them as maybe a reference and thinking, maybe if I could just tell them how dedicated this person is and how much he's learned every in and out of the diet and the science behind it, how he could really help people and have the passion and interest in doing so, that he would make a very good representative and coach for this organization. And they just weren't ready to do it. So I remember saying, well, we'll probably create something ourselves then. And we might even start inviting the experts to our town to share this information with people. And I think the only reason why I was able to even think about doing that was in the startup corporation that we were working at, we had done one larger conference and a bunch of mini seminar type 1 or 2 day conferences, seminars. So we were the host. Doug did the AV a lot of the times. I did the check-in and the registration and the signing up people and getting everybody who was coming. And then we were at the facility. I did some of the contracting with our boss. So we weren't foreigners to how the planning and the putting on the events were, how to do them. So that might be why I thought of this, but we didn't know anybody in the space. So to invite people was a big idea. And about a month or two later, Doug says, we should do this. We should invite the people. And he always forgets that I ever even said anything at that time. It was his big idea. We're going to get 1,000 people in the room. And we're going to teach or raise awareness and let people know about the benefits of the ketogenic diet, ketones themselves, reducing inflammation as a fuel source. And then all the things that we were learning for cancer to help with diabetes, to help with neurological things. And like you were, we were talking about before, this mental health, anxiety, reducing anxiety and depression that comes along with blood sugar dysregulation and inflammation. And the more we started learning about it, the more we wanted to keep, you know, make sure we were going to do this. So we built a website, and Doug was working on his coaching program in the back. It's still on our site. But we, once we started telling people we're doing the conference, and people started writing us to tell us how much it meant to them to know that there was a place that they could come together and meet some of the people that had changed their lives, we were like, this is kind of a big deal for people. And we didn't realize that it was, would be that. Somebody wrote to us and said, I can't believe the rock stars that helped me transform my life are coming to my town. And she was in San Diego. We had another lady write to us and say, I can't believe, first of all, you're literally down the street from my work office. And my son has a rare disease that the ketogenic diet changed his life, our lives. And this means so much to us. And what do you think about if I invited some of these other people that are in my Facebook group that I've met over the years who've done this to help change either their life or their child's life? And they came, five or six of them, from all over the world. We started planning this in January. She probably wrote to us in February, March. I think we started selling tickets in March. So it was probably end of March, early April, and the conference was the end of July. Those six people came, told their story. She told how, I think her son even went to Scotland or the UK, maybe it was England, or and was able to trek. He had a glycogen storage disease where he could barely get out of bed in the morning and walk. The muscles can't use glycogen or can't store it to use. So ketones is really an alternate source of fuel for that condition. And he was able to, as a teenager, travel all the way to the UK and trek with this guy and mentor of his and, you know, do things like that. And number of stories where people came to the actual conference. I remember Doug saying to me when we first put it on our website, people are buying tickets. Like one person bought a ticket and we were like, somebody bought a ticket. and then more people bought a ticket. And, you know, at the event, there was a lady who came and she was telling us a story about something we never even dreamed of also that it would help with. She had been in a really traumatic rear end car collision, where she had a few things, traumatic brain injury. She hit her head on the steering wheel or the glass, but she had crush injuries to her legs. And then I think later on, she found out she'd injured her neck, but the crush injuries and the head injury were causing a big physical syndrome that's a little bit rare and unknown. And so her healthcare team didn't know how to help her. And she found online that she'd heard ketogenic diet could help with brain injury. And I don't remember if she was having seizures or if she just kind of put the two together with neurology and head injuries, where she says, well, I have nothing to lose because she was getting fever. She was getting tremors. She was sleepless. She was depressed. She had all kinds of aches and pains and inflammation and just a long list of things. And she was telling us within weeks of doing the low carb ketogenic diet on a budget, which you've talked about before, because she hadn't been able to work for months. You know, she was eating canned chicken and frozen beans and thing, you know, vegetables out of a can or whatever she could get her hands on that didn't cost a lot. And she was still able to do low carb. And it changed her life. Her symptoms started reducing. And she's been helping people for now 7 years. That was 2016. So whenever we hear those stories, it inspires us to make sure to keep going. Because people aren't hearing this from their doctor or their healthcare team, like we've mentioned a number of times, with so many different things. And to go back to this, you know, the specific people who are teaching at the conferences, whenever we got to connect with Gary Taubes, whose books have reached, I don't know, millions of people at this point, talking about calories calorie reduction not helping people actually lose weight. Calories in, calories out, why we get fat, I think is called in the UK. It's got two different names, one in the US and one in the UK.
Good calories, bad calories is certainly one of his over here.
Okay, good. So, you know, that's a big topic just for weight loss itself. So he was one of our first, Jeff Folick and Steve Finney, talking about both ketogenic diet for the benefits that we've just discussed and also for performance. But whenever we got someone talk about mental health, it was always like a big deal, or cancer, you know, how can this help in cancer treatment? We don't know, is it helping with cancer prevention? If you talk about cancer as a metabolic disease, you would think that limiting our blood sugar excursions and our inflammation, hopefully it's limiting some cancer development. We would like to think so and hope so. But knowing that cancer therapy can be made better with fasting and ketogenic diet, lowering your sugar levels, not giving cancer cells fuel to grow out of control, but then having fasting and the ketogenic diet while in therapy, limiting the bouts of nausea that come with chemotherapy and radiation therapy, limiting hair loss, and just improving somebody's quality of life in the scariest time of their life, where, you know, they're getting these horribly traumatic treatments to kill cancer cells, and maybe this is actually making that better and hopefully helping to cure their cancer at the same time. By we were talking to she's a registered dietitian in Canada, called Martha Tettenborn. She talks about fasting as hacking chemo, her book, and how fasting and ketogenic diet, where you're not feeding sugar, is actually opening up the cancer cells to more effects of the toxic treatments, which is what you want, but also the way that it's helping nausea and less hair loss is actually protecting those healthy cells. So hair is always growing. The linings of our stomach cells are always turning over and growing new ones. And so those cells in development are being protected by fasting. It's really fascinating that when you look at the biochemistry and how our bodies react to certain things, how is that benefiting us in certain times?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, it's easy to see how your enthusiasm for the transformations that you found personally translated to bringing people to you who could resonate that around the world and your locale as well. And that you had these brilliant surprises of positive stories coming out of the conferences and the developments around various illnesses that can benefit from changing how you eat. And it leads, you talking about cancer leads into something I wanted to talk about, because, you know, around the subject of cancer, you've got people who are absolutely credible, like Dominic D'Agostino, who is a brilliant researcher, you know, does a lot of stuff for the US government and is extremely accomplished. His papers are brilliant, very thoughtful, careful scientist. And, you know, you've got a lot of those types of people who come to talk and just attend your conferences. And I've seen detractors online suggest that, you know, conferences like yours are not real in some sense, you know, either because they're so focused on one particular topic or because that topic doesn't always agree with the mainstream. I mean, what kind of criticisms do you hear and what do you make of them?
I think it's really sad, actually. When I hear somebody detract from something that can be so beneficial to people, it actually kind of boggles my mind, and it makes me really sad for the people who are missing out on the information or being led away from the information. And it happens all the time. Somebody wrote on a Twitter post just yesterday, and it said, we have all like circles and names of all the people. And apparently he wanted to say it looked like quack bingo. Like there was some kind of a layout to it that reminded him of a bingo thing. And then there was a bunch of quacks. And I'll tell you what, I've met these people over the years, and there is not one of them that makes me think that they're in it for any weird reasons, that they're out there to make money, that they're making things up. And we've had a wide, very range of people speaking on different topics, and they are all different. And some of them have come, have not come back again because we didn't feel like they had enough scientific stuff behind them, and we didn't know, you know, until they were there. But there's people who come back and come back and are invited again and again, because those are the people that we know come from a place with a huge heart. They just want to help people. They understand the biochemistry like nobody else. Like you're talking about Dom DeAgostino and Miriam Kalamian in the cancer world. Angela Poff is amazing. Nasha Winters, just in that cancer world. But helping people recover from diabetes, the physicians who are in the trenches working, Mark Cucuzella, Eric Westman, Dr. Tony Hampton in Chicago, Gary Ficke in Australia. And then when you find out that there are people like threatening their livelihood or trying to prosecute them or throw them under the bus, and you're thinking, okay, I was just looking at Gary Ficke's stuff the other day. We're very good friends with him now from over the years. And we know his story, and we know how much he was bullied, even at his hospital, from colleagues that he'd worked with for years. And he's just trying to save toes and feet and limbs. And he is doing that. And no patients were ever harmed from telling them to not eat sugar and oatmeal and grains and junk. I mean, you know, obviously he wants them to stop eating sugar and junk food, right? And get their diabetes under control. But the fastest way to get your blood sugar under control, get the healthy proteins and fats that really helps turn that wound that's on their foot around. Most times it turned it around, or at least stopped the damage that was already, you know, obviously the tissue that was already damaged can't heal again. But to a certain extent, if they've got a wound on their foot, it can heal unless it's the damage is too far done. And he's saving people from a world of losing their feet. And people are upset with him. Like, it makes no sense to me.
Yeah, the letter that he got famously said that he was curing people inappropriately. Ridiculous.
How do you cure somebody inappropriately? Like, getting cured, I don't know, do whatever you need to do to make sure that person's diabetes is getting better and their cancer has stopped growing. And
yeah, so the criticism that gets leveled at you and the people who you invite to speak at the conferences is kind of similar across the board. And I guess it comes from a mixture of people with a mixture of different backgrounds and experiences and reasons for doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not uniform. And I guess all one can do is kind of be the change you want to see in the world, isn't it? And you know, I think of people like David and Jen Unwin, who just keep going, keep treating their patients, keep holding their groups, and publish the results and let them speak for themselves. And I guess you're doing that in a kind of meta way by inviting people to talk about those results. So
we wanted to give those people a platform to share their work on a grander scale where more people will hear it. We don't want it to be in their small town in the UK only. We don't, you know, and he started realizing when he could change one patient's life. I was just thinking about him when you brought up the name, how he just really wanted to quit medicine because it wasn't making a difference. And then he is, you know, in his small town in the UK making a difference. And he thought, I can't not share this with people. More people need to know about this, because the only reason why I learned about it was from a patient. I didn't learn about it at a conference or a seminar. I didn't learn about it in a medical textbook. So we learned very quickly after hearing those stories from people that they didn't find this from their healthcare team, that we needed to make a concerted effort to try to reach more healthcare professionals. You know, and you meet the Trocalasians and the Brian Linskas of the world who were telling patients the same thing they were telling themselves, but not making a difference. That Tro got up to 350 pounds himself as a doctor, telling, you know, his patients they needed to get healthier and lose weight, and he wasn't able to do it.
And of course, he'd gone through the Yale medical system, you know, one of the richest in terms of money and in terms of publications, health systems in the world. And yes, he was trained right there amongst the best and the brightest. And it failed him.
It did. And he couldn't turn his health around. So, you know, he has a different way of sharing his message a lot of times on Twitter. He can be a little in your face. He's not like that in person. It's kind of funny. He gets on Twitter, he like turns into this person where he just really wants to get his point across and he's frustrated and you hear it. But he's the kindest human, empathetic, who really just wants to help people. So, you know, some people see someone's personality on social media and they think, oh, you know, what kind of people are these people in this low carb world? But then again, when you meet people in person, and when people have been able to come to our conferences and meet them in person, you guys, you know, doing podcasts, we do podcasts where we try to really share the personality of the people. You really get it, that where the people are coming from. Most of the people who are in this space teaching others have come from a place where they were suffering. Unfortunately, that's the person who's learning it first. And so with our work and with joining with these other people, we want to get to them before they're sick, before the physician finds us because he's just had a diagnosis of diabetes, even though he's been teaching in diabetes treatment programs for years and was supposed to be an expert. One of the first people who contacted us, so we haven't talked about yet, the Society of Metabolic Health Practitioners, was another development that came out of meeting people, working with the physicians, the researchers, the nurses, physician assistants, nurse practitioners, all the healthcare teams, and wanting to have a community that they could connect with, learn from, share ideas with. Tro was the one who really said, we need a society. We need an organization, academia, that we come together and validates what we're working on. So he talked to a number of people, January 2020, this was. And I remember him saying, Low Carb USA, we were in Florida at our Florida event, and him saying, you know, Low Carb USA will probably be in a position to be that person, that organization, to start something. And Doug started talking to him a few weeks later, and kind of they put their ideas together. And Doug said, well, right around the time the pandemic started, why don't I start looking into starting a nonprofit? What does that look like? And starting this organization. So I call it our COVID baby. From March to December, March, April, May, he was looking into the legalities of starting a nonprofit. What does that look like? How do you do it? Starting it, getting a website online. And then some of the things we had already started working on Low Carb USA. So outside of the conferences, we knew that there were people that we met and that were online that conversed with us that said, how do I find a doctor in my area? I want to make these changes. I know you always say, if I'm on medication, when I start a low carb ketogenic diet, I might need to reduce my medications, work with your physician, but my physician doesn't understand what I'm doing. That's one aspect of it. The second aspect is, I either need to teach my physician, my healthcare physician assistant, nurse practitioner, whoever it is this person is working with as their primary care, or you guys call it GP, or how do I find someone new? Who's either going to be my GP, my family doctor, internal medicine, or I need someone in specialty care for, I have got a new diagnosis of cancer, diabetes, or all, et cetera, et cetera. So we had started a list on Low Carb USA that now links back to we call it the SMHP, the Society of Metabolic Health Practitioners, shortened is the SMHP. So we started having people write in and say, I want to list my name. I'm a doctor in Chicago, Illinois, or wherever. We had international, actually. We've got people from the UK. We've got loads of people in Australia. We had been invited to help an organization, a guy in Indonesia, do an international conference in 2019. So there's a lot of Indonesian doctors on there. There's ones from Malaysia and Eastern Europe, Asia. We're trying to grow it. So if anybody's listening isn't a healthcare professional, please join. You can it's still linked from Low Carb USA, but the main list is now on Society of Metabolic Health Practitioners, where you can reach international people as a healthcare professional. And if you're looking to because you need somebody, a lot of people are doing online these days. And during this pandemic, we've learned how to do Zoom like this. So a lot of people are seeing patients and are able to do that now. I know the laws have changed and made it easier for physicians and practitioners to meet with patients online. That way, and they're not listed that way. I think right now they're listed by city, state, country. And I'm trying to figure out a way, just reminded me, do we need a checkbox that says can do online consultations for a wider area, or how does that work? But you can always contact somebody for that.
It's very exciting. You know, there's obviously even more opportunity to connect people. That seems to be the common thread for yourself and Doug's work, is to connect people, to open the possibility of connection and transformation for as many people as possible in the way that seems to be the most beneficial. And it's just so brilliant to see. What's happening, and we will definitely link to the Society of Metabolic Health Practitioners in the show notes, and we can definitely have a look at that later on. But what's exciting for you about the next meeting that's happening for the conference side of things?
I'm excited for, it's kind of crazy. Doug's already planning next January. So if anybody, hopefully people can still plan to come to the summer conference here in San Diego. And if you can't come here in person, you can do it online. And he's already so far into planning next January in Florida and making it bigger and better than it's ever been. The onions are coming to January, and a number of other people. But I think that's even on the site. A lot of it's updated now. But San Diego is in, I think when we're talking, I don't know when you're going to release this. We're about 2 months out. So it's probably going to be a little less than that by the time you air this. I'm going to look at the list of speakers at the moment. At Low Carb USA, we've updated our title to a symposium of metabolic health, because we want to reach more people. We don't want to just tar it with it's a low carb brush. It's not all about diet nutrition. It's about lifestyle. It's about, like, Dr. Tony Hampton, I mentioned him a minute ago, from Chicago. He likes to talk about sleep and exercise and reducing your stress and emotional connections a lot. So overall metabolic health, I think there's quite a few people who are going to be talking about stuff like that. Robert Stivus is actually in Florida. He's originally South African. He's going to speak again. He's been at, I think, every conference of ours since we met him. He talks about carbohydrate addiction and food addiction, like Jen Unwin does. And in fact, we're going to team him up with Jen and a few others for January of 2023, and have a whole afternoon or even day of addressing addiction, because a lot of people have a hard time transitioning to low carb, whole food, ancestral, however you want to call it, just eating good, real nutrient dense food, because they're so addicted to, they can't understand how they could ever not eat bread again.
Yeah, absolutely.
How many times have you heard that, Allie? I love bread too much.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of my listeners, join us on Clubhouse as well. We're I helped to run a room with Jen on food addiction, and some of my clients are that way inclined too. I know that I have, you know, addiction, and it is a big leap for a lot of people, even just imagining leaving sugar or leaving bread or leaving gluten behind, even though in their heads they know that if they tried it for a month, if it didn't work, then they could just go back to eating bread. But there's something so powerful there that that won't let them even make the leap. Or if they do, relapse is so common and difficult. And it's like Mark Twain supposedly said, quitting smoking is easy. I've done it hundreds of times. and I can very much sympathize with that. So that's great to hear that there's going to be a focus on addiction at the next one too.
Yeah. And also along the same lines, Joan Ifflin will be speaking. She talks about processed food addiction. So whenever you're refining sugar and grains, processing them, she actually, like Rob Sivas talks about emotional management systems and emotional buoyancy and doing things that are outside of food discomfort and, your cultural thing that all celebrations are around food, not just adjusting the food that you're eating, but changing your celebration altogether. And it's a go for a walk. It's play a sport, but not to win, just to do it. And do artwork for the sake of making you happy and doing it. And Joan talks about how the tobacco companies actually got their hands onto manufactured food companies and started advertising to kids and young adults and everybody basically how to get us addicted to junk food, processed foods, even cereal companies, you know, talking about their healthy foods and being able to label it as it lowers your cholesterol. Which I could never understand. Like I had this imagination of oats and oatmeal and whole grains and cereals, like sucking the cholesterol out of my blood. Like, I don't even know how that works. Like they're always saying it lowers your cholesterol, but how does it lower your cholesterol? Think about that. If you're still not sure about the fat consumption and grains and not eating grains, just think about like, how does it actually lower your cholesterol? But on that lines, I'm really excited. Dave Feldman will be speaking again. The Citizen Science Foundation has been delving deep into cholesterol and what does cholesterol mean? And what can we learn about the fact that maybe your cholesterol does go up on a low-carb ketogenic diet and why? And what does that mean? You know, his research has really been into who is the person whose cholesterol might go up, because a lot of people's actually gets better. The LDL usually lowers, total cholesterol often lowers, HDL, the good cholesterol, usually goes up. But there are some people whose LDL does go up, breaking down LDL into particle size, big fluffy to large, small, dense particles that stick to things, you know, is measuring those and looking at what does it mean for your disease state and your future health. There are a group of people who may be very physically active and fit and lean. He calls them lean mass hyperresponders, where the LDL goes remarkably up. He's been looking a lot at triglyceride levels as well. And he's got a study going on here in Southern California in Los Angeles. He's partnered up with a lipidologist, cardiologist, I forget which one he is, interventional radiologist, one of them at UCLA, University of California, Los Angeles, where they're studying people in particular to scan their arteries, keep track of the levels of their cholesterol. So hopefully he's going to be able to share some of that. I know they're really deep into the study, so they probably won't be able to share a lot of results, but looking forward to seeing what he can share. And they've been publishing some papers along the way, him and a group of people talking about this, just getting more eyeballs on it. And then in the cardiology realm, Asim Malhotra is going to be coming out, which is fun. We haven't had him. He was supposed to speak in Seattle in 2019 and then couldn't make it. So this will be the first time for him to be involved in our event in San Diego, which will be fun. We always want to make sure we've got talk about cardiology and lipids, because like you were saying earlier, everybody really wants to have a confirmation and a confidence that eating more fat isn't going to make their health worse and their heart health worse. And there's a lot of evidence that says cardiovascular health gets better. Inflammation goes down, blood sugar levels, diabetes is the number one risk for heart disease. So triglycerides come down. And inflammation, I think, is the most important thing, where you're not having the damage done to the inside of the lining. So we're going to talk about that. Let's see, who else is coming? Registered dietitian Michelle Hearn, talk about the frustrations of a dietitian in the hospital setting and what they're recommending and what's working, what's not working. When, again, a registered dietitian who's recommending how to eat is very ill herself. She had to question and start looking at changes that she needed to be made. So she shares her story about going full carnivore, reducing not only the pain that she was having when she's a runner, a long distance runner. She was having a lot of pain and lack of energy, running into walls that she just hadn't had those problems before, not able to run almost at all. But she had severe anxiety and depression, where that's really turned around. And she, just like so many of us, have just known to make sure that she's able to teach people how to feel better and not be constrained by the kind of guidelines that she was told she had to teach.
If I had to summarize what you're saying, it's that you're finding new people who are breathing fresh life into the topic by bringing their own perspectives, and yet again, you're growing it and working out how to make it more generalizable and future thinking.
Yeah, for sure. We want to be innovative. We want to be like Jody Nishida. She's a pharmacist. She's a clinical pharmacist who, you don't always think of a pharmacist as being someone who's going to give you food recommendations, right? She's learned that prescription medicine isn't what she wants to be as her forefront of filling prescriptions. She wants to be in the medical team, teaching people how to eat well so they don't need medication. So she's actually going to teach how she's built a practice, talking to people about nutrition and getting off medications and feeling better. She's new. She's been to all the conferences here in San Diego over the years, and now she's going to be speaking. So she said something the other day on the leading edge of medicine and patient care. And so we'd like to think that this is the new frontier. Adele Haidt, unfortunately, lost her battle to cancer a few months ago, and we are going to miss her tremendously. But she, at our events and the work that we've been doing with her over the years, she was part of helping put together what we call the clinical guidelines. And they are the basis of the Society of Metabolic Health Practitioners. They actually started on Low Carb USA, transitioned them with that practitioner database and provider listing to the SMHP. So the clinical guidelines had a huge worldwide board of advisors. The Onwins were on it. We've mentioned many of the people that we've been talking about are on the board of advisors. And we'll talk a lot about that at the conference, because it always weaves itself in there. We've had forums where clinicians talked about the struggles that they have in their practice with not being understood by their colleagues, patients not really sure, media reports are telling them they're not sure that the ketogenic diet is what it is, or is safe, or is unpopular. all the things that people run into where they want to make this transition, they've heard about it and they're not sure. What I wanted to get to was those clinical guidelines are available to anybody who is a patient, layperson, who their physician doesn't understand the low carb ketogenic transition, what the benefits are, what the history is, what the things they have to look out for, deprescribing medications because things change so quickly. Like, I love Dr. Unwin talks about high blood pressure and how it comes down so quickly and why. But Eric Westman and Mark Kukuzela and a number of the physicians on here, the diet doctor, talk about diabetes, and diabetes medication often has to be done, change very quickly as well. So that's listed in those clinical guidelines. We talk about protein all the time in the conferences. And so I'm excited to make sure that we don't have a name for how low carb, or what we call in Society of Metabolic Health Practitioners, is therapeutic carbohydrate reduction, or you've talked about paleo's ancestral eating. It's, but none of that really tells people that you're focusing on getting enough protein and amino acids that are the building blocks of all the cells in our body and our muscles, and then getting fat, healthy fat. What does that mean, healthy fat? But we'll be talking about that with Peter Ballerset. We'll be talking about protein. I'm sure Amy Berger, who's a nutritionist, will be talking talks about protein. We don't have the topics of all the talks that are going to be coming this summer, because they're still going to be submitting their abstracts within the next couple of weeks, but that schedule should be up by the time maybe your podcast is airing, mid-July.
I think so. Yeah. And of course, we were talking before about how listeners to the podcast can get a discount with a special code. So what's the discount and what's the code?
So for anybody who wants to come to San Diego or watch it from the comfort of their home, office or home, you can register now with the code. We decided it was going to be AHT20, so Ali Houston Transforms, AHT20 for 20% off of registration. The online viewing includes live stream. If you're in the UK or Australia or other European countries or the US, whatever it is, you can watch it live. It's going to be California Pacific time. So if that time is in the middle of the night for you, or, you know, really late at night or early morning, you can watch the replays indefinitely. We don't put a time limit on the recordings being available to anybody who registers. So 20% off, I think, is less than $80 for 4 days, 25 plus speakers, and the recordings forever. We're going to have a chat forum that's available for anybody online. I kind of stay attached to that the whole weekend, and we all talk to each other wherever we are in the world. I try to get people's questions in from their home or office, wherever they are. Doesn't always work that I can get everyone's in, but one of the really fun aspects of our conference is after every speaker, we make sure that there's plenty of time for those that are there to ask questions. So it's really immersive program where you hear from people who've come from all over the world, ask their personal questions or professional questions of the speaker that's relevant to them. You know, something they didn't understand, something they're looking to find out, something they're hoping that can be answered for them either then or at a later stage. And there's pretty neat discussions that happen and get to know everybody that way. And as long as there's some time in between the end of that Q&A and the next speaker, I'll squeeze in and read off the stuff that's online to the speaker. And then Sunday always has a really long Q&A panel. So what I've found over the last few, we've all adjusted how we've done these virtual and online things. I found that if we didn't have time, I learned there's usually plenty of time in the Sunday afternoon final panel to get everybody's questions in there. And so whoever's able to stay through the whole weekend and stay Sunday will be on our expert panel on Sunday. Usually 5 or 6. Sometimes we've had 8 or 9, 10 people on the panel. So
brilliant. And for around $80, that's such great value. I mean, that's like 65 or 70 pounds. And it's not a lot of money for what you're talking about. All of that cutting edge information that you'll have access to forever, and all the Q&As and the chance to put your own input in and get the interaction. It's really great. And congratulations on putting it all together over these years, because I know it's not been easy all the time. And I know that it's not something that, rakes in cash for you. I think some people think that there is a cash in effect and people are just trying to sell books or something, not realizing that cause and effect doesn't always work like that. You know, sometimes people are doing things because they work well and they chime with their values. They're not putting something out in order to make money.
No, and we found this is not a way to make money. I mean, it's never been our focus, and it's never, when we came from jobs where we came from a startup, we actually quit to do this. And we were already below zero. And, you know, finding out how much hotels charge, it was a big hotels, and it just being us was a bit of a shell shock. And Doug said, just do it. Let's just do it. And people will come, you know, almost like that ballpark thing, you know, build it and they will come. We really didn't know. And he wanted to put 1,000 people in the room, and 350 people came to that first one. And it was great. It didn't cover the cost. I remember the hotel staff bringing me a bill for us, the rooms and for all those speakers. And it was like $11,000. And I was like, they had been hounding us for deposit. And they were like, we're going to cancel the event if you don't pay that deposit. I'm like, we don't have it. And people are coming. Like, people literally have plane tickets and hotels booked, and you can't cancel. It's like a week before. And they kept threatening us, and we're like, what can we do? Like, we'll figure it out. And the attendance didn't cover the cost. And so every event, we're on our 17th conference. I don't even know how that's possible. They've almost all been paying for the one before this. So the only reason how we got out of the hotel, that one, was everybody's like, when's the next one? We can't believe how amazing this has been. I got to meet Gary Taubes. I got to meet Jeff Folick. I got to meet all this, you know, people have made a difference, and I've learned new people and new information. When's the next one? We're like, we haven't even finished this one yet. They're like, we'll pay now for next year if you'll agree to do this next year again. And we were like, Doug literally tells the story. I stayed up like half the night building the page, because it doesn't just, you know, so he, you know, it doesn't just duplicate all together, but he just had to put all the pieces together and do the website and figure out how to get people, you know, sign up and change the name and all that. People were signing up for the next year. Like, I think half of the people who were there signed up for the next year. And we were like, oh my gosh, we didn't even know who's coming or who's going to speak. And they're like, we don't care. We're sure you'll figure it out. And we're like, we actually had to change hotels. Find a new hotel, get the date, we had to change the date, and then, I don't know. So it's one of those things, like Doug had learned at the very beginning. People do have a lot to offer, and we'll meet new people who can teach. And honestly, we could have a 7 or 10 day conference to have everybody that we would like to be there to teach and share their stories and share the information. And I'm sorry that we're going so long, but I get talking about it and I get really excited.
No, not at all.
There is so much information, right?
Yeah, and it's fantastic. And one of the great things about being able to access the recordings is that people can just digest the information at their own leisure. And, you know, it's been really great talking to you about your personal transformation and about how the conference has evolved and how you've come up with the Society for Metabolic Health Practitioners. You know, so maybe once again, just to round off, if you could say the names of the websites for the Society of Mental Health Practitioners, sorry, Society of Metabolic Health Practitioners, and for the conference, and the discount code one last time.
Yeah, absolutely. So lowcarbusa.org, there's a upcoming events, or you can Google the Symposium for Metabolic Health 2020 San Diego. But lowcarbusa.org, all the links are there under events or on the main page, upcoming events. And the Society of Metabolic Health Practitioners.org, I think we'll get you there, but we've shortened it to the SMHP.org for all that. And we look forward to anybody who can join us in any of the upcoming conferences, especially the one coming up. We still have space in our exhibition hall. People have been, somebody was talking on our community page about how they think sponsors help us pay for this whole event. They don't. There's a very minimal amount of exhibitors that we have at the conference, and, you know, they help cover the cost. But every single person who buys a ticket, who watches it online, who comes to San Diego, who buys a, gets a hotel room, and they have, we have these beautiful dinners that are all low carb, chef prepared, healthy fats, no margarine, no vegetable oils, no sugar, some sugar substitutes, all three nights. It's a 4-day event. It's on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, outside under the, at sunset, under the stars. We all get a chance to sit down and talk with each other and eat good food and not worry about the kind of food it is. We have, we usually have a wine tasting, networking, talk with each other right before dinner after the conferences. So people who are there in person have a chance to really get to know each other. And the discount applies to the dinner as well. Registration and the dinner sold separately to this one. And if you're a medical professional and you need CMEs to present to your licensing board, medical board, those are available, and they're also 20% off with the AHT20 code.
AHT20. Brilliant. Okay, fantastic. It's been such a great time talking to you, Pam. I really appreciate you coming on, and I can't wait to hear how the events go.
Thank you so much, Ali. And you know what you're doing to help others is a part of what we wanted to be, part of the solution, part of helping people change their lives. I'm glad to hear of the work you're doing ongoing work, because I know we've been talking for many years, and it's great to bridge the distance between the west coast of the US and California and all the way over in the UK, and everyone from around the world who's joining in. It's a small world when we all connect and help each other and support each other and realizing better health and how to live our lives better. So it's really nice to join you today, and I look forward to hearing more of your work and more of your podcasts and seeing more of your success stories that you put out there when you help your next client and share the story with us.
Brilliant. Okay, thanks, Pam.
Thank you, Ali.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Please don't forget to jump over to iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts and hit the subscribe button. And please don't forget to leave a 5-star rating and review to get the podcast in front of more eyes. This podcast is made possible thanks to paleocanteen.co.uk, which is my company. That's paleocanteen.co.uk. Thanks. See you next time.